We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm up your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hello, CMOS girlies. It is a Tuesday morning. You've tuned into the pod. I'm here with Emma, and we're going to get into things. You know, we have some random subjects about wellness that some of you asked about, some of you definitely didn't, but you're going to hear about them anyways. How's it going, Emma? You know, the solar eclipse today. What are your thoughts on it?
Yes, the solar eclipse did happen today. We had a little solar eclipse party at the office. We all went to the roof and like tried to watch it. Wow. Underwhelming, to be completely honest. We had the glasses and everything, and nothing really changed. The moon was kind of in the shape of like a tiny little banana, which I thought was really funny, but I was really expecting some grand old, you know, spectacle, and that just did not happen. So maybe in 2044 I'll get the full total solar eclipse experience, but truthfully I didn't even know that it was happening until like last week. I think I'm just like so tapped out of like the science circles, or maybe I just like don't keep up with like the news in that way. So it was funny kind of seeing everyone get excited about it, and I got excited because of that, but I thought it was more fun just to like see like people gathering in parks and like on other rooftops to watch it.
I think for me, I was underwhelmed by it as well. I actually didn't have glasses, and I was sitting on the West Side Highway just because I was gonna go like do some emails on my phone. It was a nice day, whatever, read my book. And some lady like saw me just sitting on a blanket and was like, do you want my glasses? Have you looked at it yet? And I was like, no, I haven't. She's like, here, you got to come look at it. I was like, okay, let's just go chat with this old lady who was very kind. But yeah, I looked at it, you know, it was cool. I was just shocked at how many people were outside. Like I work freelance, so like I can choose my own schedule. If I want to go do whatever at 4 p.m. tomorrow, I can most of the time. But there were so many groups of people like clearly off from work or like coworkers all going out. And it really brought me back to the pandemic in a weird way, where like you're seeing people operate outside of like these really strict work schedules. Like everyone was just decided that we're going to take a 10-minute break today and that's okay. And work will go on and the world work will go on. And I just thought it was like beautiful. I saw all these like kids and parents and just like people, as you said, like gathering, which was really cute. And then we had an earthquake here in New York City last week, which was underwhelming as fuck for me. I finished up a run that was shitty, classic Kate behavior. I was foam rolling, and I live in a building. I'm not going to dox where I live, but there's always like construction happening. I just feel like generally, like I'm pretty close to a subway line, so sometimes I'll hear the subway, whatever. I'm in a kind of noisy part of town. So I was foam rolling, minding my business, and I heard a shake, like shit in my apartment started to shake. And my immediate thought was like, wow, they must be doing just like shitty ass construction to the apartment above me. Okay, because I live next to an apartment that's getting renovated, whole weird situation that I will tell the podcast if I move out of this building soon, because it's wild what they're doing in that apartment next to me. So I just assumed, oh, construction. And then boyfriend, sister texted me, did you feel the earthquake? And I was like, that was an earthquake? Like, sorry, I live in New York City. I'm not waking up every day expecting a fucking earthquake. And I feel like everyone on the internet about the earthquake thing was lying. Like, how did you immediately think, oh, that was an earthquake? Because it wasn't predicted. Like, it wasn't like, oh, the eclipse is happening. The earthquake was random as fuck. So I got annoyed with all the earthquake folks. And I just went on with my day when it happened.
Yeah, I didn't really notice or feel the earthquake at all. I just like had my headphones and was probably like deep in work, and I was at my boyfriend's, and like he didn't really feel it either. But yeah, everyone around me was like talking about the earthquake, and I had a lot of people texting and asking if I was safe, and I was like, yeah, didn't really
Oh,
feel
yeah.
anything. Like, didn't actually even know that there was an earthquake. But yeah, lots of crazy things happening
I know.
in New York these days.
I saw some tweet that was like, it's a really great week for small talk. And I'm like, that's so true. Like, talking about the earthquake, the eclipse, like, there you go. If you have a first date this week, amazing topics of conversation for that. One of my points is kind of related to I might move out of this building that I'm in. I've been here for 3 years and I've just been doing a lot more like mood boarding and like vision boarding and journaling and dreaming, we shall say. Because I'm very satisfied and fulfilled in life right now, but I definitely see myself like growing up a lot in like a positive way. Like I see myself becoming more of an adult, having different needs and also just different priorities. I think like 3 years ago when I got this apartment, like Emma and I just started the podcast, I was going to go to law school and then I started freelancing with like social content. So not like when you get a place, it really has to fit, you know, your exact job or lifestyle, but I've said this like off the cuff to friends. It's like I would be a lot better of like an influencer if I had better natural lighting and like more space to film and I was inspired by my kitchen. Like I would post recipe videos all the time, like health and wellness shit. But my space has kind of confined me from growing in that perspective. And now like I'm at a better place financially where I feel like I can invest in myself and I can just see myself, you know, living in New York and I have different needs. Like I'm running distance all the time. I've been running into Brooklyn a ton. So I could see myself like actually making a Brooklyn move because I've been in Manhattan for 7 years. So that's all to say, I think this is the time for the girlies to get really invested in, you know, vision boards and that type of thing. I think it's really powerful to check in on your progress and like your self-growth a few months down the line. Because I was looking at journal entries that I had like right after my dad passed in September. And a lot of the things that I was really anxious about or fearful about like didn't happen. And a lot of things I wanted to overcome like did really turn out for me. Obviously, some things missed the mark on, still haven't accomplished, whatever. But I think I try to at least like intentionally mark when these changes of the seasons happen. And I feel like if I don't do that with like journaling or some sort of like mood board, et cetera, life just passes by. You know, we don't have college and like spring break and different like systems outside of us to kind of denote like when time changes. I mean, I guess you could say like the new year, but I've just been really like honing into the fact that like it's gonna be summer, like really embrace the fact that it's like transitioning and like get excited about it and like what do you want to do? Otherwise, you're gonna wake up and it's gonna be like August 30th and you're like, what the fuck did I do like for the whole summer?
I love that. I feel like I'm always inspired by how good you are at like journaling and like always constantly reflecting. And yeah, I'm excited for wherever it is that you end up moving. I'm in full support of Brooklyn, but there's so many good neighborhoods in
Yeah.
Manhattan. My one point on the pod is that I have just been experiencing like never ending ailments. I think, as they say, everything comes in threes. So I had a really awful flu, which then turned into a sinus infection. And now maybe this is TMI, but I'm like dealing with like a UTI, which I'm like, why and is this happening? And thank God for Benchtopia, because I remember like a long, long, long time ago when I used to talk or used to listen to them, they were like talking about UTIs and like this one thing called like D-mannose, and they were like truly like bowing down to how good it was. And when I was like, up at like 3 a.m. because I like couldn't sleep because I was in pain, I was like looking up all the different type of supplements you can take for UTIs, and I remember that Benchtopia was talking about stuff, so I got that, and I'm hoping that will help cure me. And yeah, I just feel like these past few weeks haven't been the best for me. I think like mentally, when it comes to maybe like my love for my body, and I think it's just because like I've have felt so run down, and I feel like my body's been like working against me. And like, I never get sick, and I'm very, very like lucky and fortunate and privileged that like I'm not someone who has any chronic illnesses, and like I don't really ever get run down that often. So I kind of feel like, for me, I feel like since people kind of view K and I perhaps as like the wellness people, I almost feel like a failure when I do get these like really bad illnesses, or I just like, you know, have to take a few days off of work because I am sick, just because I think I like take so much pride in the fact that like I have a healthy immune system. And I think just like laying around for like a few days just like never makes anyone feel good. So that kind of gets me to my point of like learning to say nice things about yourself, which is very hard to do, I think, when you're in kind of this like negative self-talk mindset. And I think my boyfriend has been like really helpful. And I think it's like good to have like any good support group or person, whether that is like a significant other, your best friend, parents. And like what he's been doing with me, he's just like, whenever I say something like relatively negative about myself, he's like, say three nice things about my girlfriend. And so then I say that and I repeat it three times. And I feel like that's really has helped me and has stuck with me. And, you know, I think it's okay to like ask for help. And I think it's okay to, you know, not be so in love with like yourself or your body, even if you like are already kind of in that like self-acceptance and self-love path. But yeah, it's just kind of where I've been at these past few weeks. I'm like ready to finally feel better and like kind of bring back some of my like hippie woo-woo wellness routines, since I'm like, for whatever reason, convinced that like me taking like turmeric pills is going to like save me from like whatever other viruses and bacteria are out in the world. And I know it's probably just that time of the year, but yeah, I just feel like me constantly being like sick and feeling off is just like negatively impacted by myself in many different ways that I was not anticipating.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. You don't feel like yourself, and it's hard to envision yourself like feeling attractive or worth anything. I definitely feel the same way. Like, I finally had a breakthrough with running, and I literally felt 80% better after I finished that run, even if, like, you know, like 99% of my life was still the same. You know, it just changed a lot for me mentally. And I think on that theme, like, I've been working a lot on like reprogramming my brain and like how I think about stuff, because what happens in your subconscious is like something like 90% of like what's kind of flowing through your brain throughout the day. And if you just have negative shit sitting in there, like even if you're not trying to go to the negative or say mean things to yourself, like that's just the default and the automatic thing. And I have learned in like my own experience with like trauma and grief and all of that, like you really have to reprogram it and take changing yourself as like an active thing, because you're going to fall back to like whatever your old habits are. And like really hammering in the positive hippie shit is like going to get you there. Because I just had this like kind of like not a breakdown, but like a journaling breakthrough. It's like, what is it serving you to kind of sit in like the negative thoughts? Like, this bad thing's gonna happen to me, or I'm gonna lose this. Like, what is that benefiting you in the present? And it's really not. It's just kind of like an anxiety and a fear about like shit you can't control. So at least having like, you know, a better mindset amongst all other things that are happening in your life is like the only real thing that you can control. Because yeah, fucked up shit happens to all of us. So you're not alone if you're going through any weird, funky stuff. Also, astrology girls, let us know, because Emma and I are clearly not astrology girls. Like, does the eclipse mean something about astrology as well? Are those interlinked? I don't know. I get very confused about all of the things related to the universe out there. So let us know.
I thought you were going to ask if Mercury's in retrograde, because I feel like then that would kind of explain why we're like going through shit or whatever. But
I think
yeah,
that
I'm
might be it.
sure the solar eclipse is like connected to something. I'm sure someone's got some sort of like weird conspiracy going on.
Yeah, give it to us. But anywho, I'm gonna call Emma back and we'll get into this week's pod. Tons of fun subjects for the girlies, so let's get into it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Our next partner is a product that Emma and I take every single day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted to find a greens powder that actually blended together. The taste is hands down the best greens powder I've been able to find. It even has a mild tropical taste, and you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, you name it.
For me, I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a supplement that actually tastes great. I've always known that taking a greens powder is a great addition to one's wellness routine, but I could just never get past the unpleasant taste. This completely changed once I started taking Athletic Greens. It tastes so good that I actually look forward to drinking it every morning, something I never knew was possible. Plus, Athletic Greens contains dairy-free probiotics, and let me tell you, my digestion has never been better.
Another thing that Emma and I love is that it's the one thing with the best things. Athletic Greens uses the best of best products based on the latest science with constant product iterations and third-party testing.
It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is go visit athleticgreens.com/CMOS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CMOS to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster just like us, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance.
In today's podcast, we will be discussing all of the latest about health and wellness for Gen Z. That's why we're excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of CMOS Girlies.
Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EES System. If you haven't heard of the EES System, you'll want to listen up.
This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in New York City or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable, which is perfect for all CMOS girlies.
If you're interested in experiencing the EES system technology for yourself, you can go to unifiedhealing.com/CMOS to learn more and find a center near you. That's UNIFYD healing.com/CMOS.
No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EES system. Okay, CMOS Relay, so we're going to get into the main part of today's podcast episode. Again, we're going to be touching on multiple different subjects, but the first one is one that I have been kind of feeling personally recently, which is kind of related to regaining motivation and dealing with burnout. I feel like for me, these past few weeks or months, I just haven't felt as strong in the pool. And I feel like I've kind of have quote unquote plateaued, or I just feel like I've been like leaving all of my swim practices, not necessarily feeling like I gave it my all, but also like when I'm in the pool, I feel like I am. So it's a very like confusing experience. And I think I've been just like losing motivation, perhaps just because I'm like bored with what my current routine is. And so I think if anyone is in this situation, I think this is something that we all are going to experience, especially for girlies who are student athletes. These are just some things that I've been kind of thinking about reflecting on and trying to get myself out of this current situation and scenario that I'm in. And I think the first thing to really ask yourself is like, why are you maybe lacking motivation or feeling the sense of burnout? And it can definitely be for a few different reasons, whether it's like you're not recovering enough or you're just like bored with your overall routine. And I think it's like one thing for a lot of people to remember that like it's definitely okay to take like actual ample time off of any type of, you know, workout regimen or like organized sports that you are doing. Like most organized sports that kids do participate in have off seasons for a reason. Like in swimming, I know when I was a competitive swimmer growing up, we would always get like 2 to 3 weeks off after like a championship meet, just because like that was the end of the season. It was like, okay, you put in all your hard work, like you can finally now let your body fully recover after like training so hard for multiple months. And I think like, even if you're not quote unquote, like an athlete, it's still necessary to take these periods of time off. And I know that can be scary because you don't want to like technically quote unquote, like lose your fitness, but taking like 2 to 3 weeks is not really going to hurt you. And I know like a lot of marathon runners, like will often take like a month off after their marathon, just to like let their body chill out. And I think just like at that point, you just like, don't even want to be thinking about running anymore. And if you're like, I don't want to like take a full amount of time off, just like add in more active recovery days. That's something that I've been doing. And I think I've been much better at like actually listening to my body. And if I wake up and I'm like, you know what, I just know I'm going to have a shitty workout, I know I'm better off just to like go on a long walk and like maybe do some stretching and yoga and just like more, yeah, like active recovery versus like trying to force it in the pool and just have like a really, you know, poor workout. Cause I think that just then puts you into a vicious cycle. Another thing that I think is like really good to try to do is just like changing up the routine to bring in a new challenge. You know, if you're going in and doing like the same workout class or just, you know, the same routine of lifts like day in and day out, like, yes, like you can have and bring in a new challenge through increasing the weight. But I think introducing like a new exercise that makes you really kind of rethink your coordination, like the mind body connection, just can just bring like a new spark in that, you know, experience for you. And I think if your workout is, your workout performance is declining, this can be like another sign of burnout. So like I said, just like learning to like fully listen to your body, I think is like one of the best tools that you can have. And it's definitely a long process and some people are better at it than others. And I think like, just as I've gotten like, you know, older and like a bit more mature, I've have come to realize that like, okay, it's totally fine to take a day off. Like if your workout is declining, that's like a sign that your body is fatigued and it needs to recover. And it's not like anything is wrong with you. It's not like you're like suddenly like bad at lifting or bad at like playing volleyball or bad at swimming. It's just like your body is like truly like at its end. And so I think like when you are kind of getting to that moment, it's like really focusing on fueling and sleep and really allowing your body not just to recover physically, but also mentally. And that can look very differently for many different people. And then that kind of gets me into this whole thing of like shifting your mindset of like, what is your goal? Like, is your goal unrealistic? And is that what is causing you maybe to get like, not remain like motivated anymore just because it doesn't feel attainable? And like, perhaps you know that deep down. And I think like maybe removing the goal that you have for you and just kind of focusing on, you know, the simple act of moving your body. Cause really at the end of the day, we're all participating in any type of movement just because we love how good it makes us feel afterwards. Not necessarily because like we're getting this like PR time. Like, yeah, those are all like great things to experience. And it's very rewarding to see all your hard work pay off. But I think like, for me, it's like, you know, if I'm not having like, you know, the best swim of my life, or maybe I just feel like I'm a little bit slower, just knowing that I am moving my body and just doing something good for myself is, I think, something that is equally as rewarding. And if you're trying to find your source of motivation, let's say you've taken some time off, maybe you fell off working out. I know it is like spring and summer season, so this is like a very like popular time for people to get back into fitness now that it's warmer out, and it can be like very daunting to get back into that. I think like finding your source of motivation, whether that's like winning, getting faster or stronger, or feeling more energized are all things that can really like motivate you. And I think one thing with motivation is that it's not just going to come to you. Like you have to really kind of create it. And really, you know, it's just like lacing up your shoes and walking out the door. Like that's really like the hardest thing, or getting yourself to the gym. That's like the hardest thing. Then like once you're there, like everything is pretty easy from there. And I think, you know, you can set realistic goals. I think like creating routine is like really important if you're trying to get back into like motivating yourself and like finding the source of motivation. If you just like, you know, develop a way where it's like very easy for you to remember to like go to the gym and it's not like a hassle after work, etc. I think also just like being flexible and giving yourself grace. Like you don't need to work out every day. If you get 3 workouts in a week, like that's like far plenty. I think also just like making it social, you know, those days where like maybe I don't necessarily want to swim and don't feel too motivated, I always know like I want to go because it's like a really great social outlet for me. And for me as an introvert, it's really important that I do get, you know, adequate interactions with people, because I can typically just, you know, isolate myself and be like a little hermit. And then also keeping track of your progress. I think when you're able to like actually look down and see like how much you've progressed, that can just like further motivate you. And, you know, whether that's through pace and using like some sort of like running app, or, you know, having a little notebook when you go into the gym and do your weights and like seeing how you've been increasing weight. I think like those little tidbits and like seeing your own personal growth and like physical strength grow is, I think, just like one of the best things, just because like in the moment you may not really notice it, but each session and each practice and each workout does kind of, you know, help fuel your growth. And it's like really great to see that like all those individual days did build up to something bigger and better. And I think like one thing for me is that like many of us use our primary form of exercise as like a way to define ourselves and to relate to others. And I just like want to encourage people that like you are allowed to like explore and do other forms of exercise. So if you are a runner, like you don't have to like be a runner your entire life. You can like go and maybe experiment with, cycling, et cetera. And like I think for me, like I have just always identified as a swimmer because I was basically a swimmer for 10 to 12 years, like in my youth. And then when I got back into it, I just automatically identified as a swimmer again. And so I think I kind of get caught up in this like whole idea of like, oh, I can't run because I've never have really been a runner because I never ran my entire life. And so I think I easily get discouraged to experiment with other forms of exercise. And I think what I've been trying to do recently is like reshifting my mindset. And it's like, no, like this is like an opportunity for you to learn a new skill and try something new. Not that like I don't know how to run and I have run in the past, but it's like something that's kind of been calling my name just because a lot of people in my life are training for stuff. And I think like I want kind of that sort of moment or just like a certain like, goal or challenge outside of the pool for myself to maybe, experience. So that's just kind of like a few things that I suggest people considering. And physical activity and like working out and exercise, like it's such like a lifelong journey and it's going to constantly ebb and flow. And I think it's like good to kind of reflect and, take a moment to really think about what your goals are, how you're feeling. And, if you need to take time off, that doesn't make you like a failure or weak by any means.
Yeah, and one thing that's helped me a lot shape my mindset about movement and kind of like Emma said, is it's like a lifelong journey, is reading memoirs from people that are in their like 40s and 50s that are runners or their 30s. Just because I've run for like 5 years, I don't have a lot of experience with like doing something for that long. Like I played volleyball, but I feel like that doesn't really count as like an adolescent. Like I wasn't taking it seriously when I was like 12 or 14, like caring about the sleep and the nutrition and all of that stuff together. Because I just read a book by a former Nike runner, Kara Goucher, and her story, and it's a lot about like the abuse that happened at Nike in Oregon. But it talks a lot about like how she went through injuries, and like she was a pro runner, so a lot more on the line where like she had to perform at certain races or would lose her salary, and she was raising a kid and like all of this. But just hearing someone come back from injuries and kind of have, talent and skill in a sport for like 10, 15 years, and also a lot of her career successes happened when she was in her 30s. Like, I think that gives a lot of, optimism to the girlies that just because you're 20 and you don't have a gym routine, like, you don't have to be like that forever. Like, you will find a way to make movement accessible to you. Different subject next up, but we're going to talk about psychedelics, which is something we've never really touched on in CMOS Girlies. It is definitely in the wellness kind of niche and the lane of it. I mean, some people think of psychedelics and think of like raves and going out. And if that's you, go off, I guess. But in this podcast episode, in terms of psychedelics, I want to talk about psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy, also known as PAP, and kind of talking about how this is a very new, interesting form of research that's emerging in like mainstream health and wellness. Like, it's not just Eastern, it's like doctors in the Western space and research institutions across the United States are looking into this. And I think it is very interesting. And like 40 years from now, we're probably going to look at what we're doing right now and be like, wow, why didn't we have psychedelic assisted therapy like installed like much sooner? So when you think of psychedelics, obviously people are thinking of like psychedelic drugs and you're going to raves and your brain is getting altered and people are tripping and stuff. But this is much different than recreational use of psychedelics. And the US government sort of defines PAP as a potential breakthrough therapy for PTSD and different forms of depression. And it involves psychotherapy in very individualistic approaches based on a patient's experience. And you receive a pharmaceutical grade of a psychedelic drug in a very medically safe, controlled environment. So it wouldn't be something like go to a dispensary, go buy shrooms, take them, clean yourself of your PTSD. This would be something that you and a doctor would agree upon. You'd have to find a perfect practitioner. You'd have to find a safe environment. And the doses that you get are medically administered. So they would do that for you under their supervision, in control. I'll describe a little bit more, but that's sort of like the general background of what the experience is like. It is still very much being investigated. The therapy guidelines haven't even been developed of like if this were to be legalized and administered, like who would get to administer this type of drug? How would people apply for it, or would everyone qualify for it, or like how much would it cost? Where could you get it? Those things still haven't been developed yet. but it's likely to be considered for approval by the FDA in this year, at least psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy with MDMA, just specifically for the treatment, though, of PTSD. And this is going to be the first means that psychedelic agents could be legally administered up and since like the mid-1900s. So it would be a huge shift in like how we treat psychedelics in terms of like health and wellness and like the medical system. Now, PAP with psilocybin has also been designated as a breakthrough therapy, but for different symptoms and things that people are trying to cure. Psilocybin is primarily used for treatment-resistant depression, and there's also early stage development of it being used for substance use disorders, anxiety, eating disorders, obsessive compulsive disorder, and a lot more. But once again, we don't have like clinical studies on psilocybin yet. And so, like, what the experience is like. Now, I watched Michael Pollan. He wrote the book Your Mind on Plants, and he's also written like The Omnivore's Dilemma. And there's a, I think, either a Netflix or like an HBO companion to his book that talks about the different chapters in that book, like Your Mind on Plants. And one of the plants that he talks about is psilocybin. And so, if you want like a visual kind of idea of what I'm talking about, like what would the treatment actually look like, I think that documentary really paints a good picture. And it also really destigmatizes the drug use. Like, I'm not saying everyone should go out and take shrooms right now and like everyone needs it. But when you learn the people that are going to get treatment and when you learn how specific and serious the treatment is administered, I think you get a lot more empathetic to people that are going to this means to like treat whatever issues they may have. Like if you're someone that has severe trauma and you have been blocked for 10 years and like really struggling and you want to give this a try and you found a practitioner, like I find a lot of empathy for people in those situations. And I think there's so much just like drug stigma across America. From like the war on drugs, like I experienced that a lot with weed on social media, like just people's biases about it. And I think psychedelics have the same bias that like it's going to ruin your brain and whatever. And it very much can, but in these settings, it's much more controlled and serious. So a psychedelic experience, as described by like a PAP treatment, would be very content rich and very emotionally intense. Once again, you would not just sign up for this willy-nilly, like you'd have to apply. Get approved, like talk a lot about the specific things that you are trying to resolve. Many people consider this to be like one of the most meaningful experiences in their life. And that's why people need really good guidance and support system as they're doing this. Because if you don't have the right mindset and then you go and take psychedelics, like things could go horribly wrong. People need someone to guide them through like what's going on in their brain and when memories do come up. And then also like exploring like the trauma and like things they haven't thought about and kind of understanding how to go forward with a new understanding of this and like give it meaning in their life once they're done tripping, I suppose. So you want a safe environment doing it. You want to trust your practitioner doing it. And I think you also want to be ready to process whatever grief or trauma you have. And I think that's the biggest kind of thing that I push back when people think like, oh, psychedelics, if we just, legalize it and people have access to it, it's like, I think people really know the risks of like what this could be, like going on a macro trip to like cleanse your trauma. Like people who do ayahuasca, like maybe some people sign up for it willy-nilly and then they realize that, oh my God, this was a crazy experience. But like, I'm pretty sure if you're going this far to get into it, like you probably really want to clear something up and you have a good reason to do so. And patients typically receive like a moderate to a large dose of psychedelic drugs in either 2 to 3 extended sessions, and it's kind of spaced out over a few weeks. Some of the sessions can last as long as 6 hours, and how I've seen it described is like you're either laying on a bed or like sitting, however you feel comfortable. The doctor gives you whatever drug goes for you in that situation. You might listen to music that are it's like very selected by your practitioner. And also like clinically tested to help people during this time. So like we don't have clinical trials to see like what music helps people's brains like change during this time. But yeah, you kind of have this drug experience where there's introspection, there's a peak experience, emotional release, and then you return to calm. And so this is why it's so important to have that therapeutic guide like present there at the, the whole time that this goes on for you, because you want someone to guide you through your feelings and make sure that you feel, supported from start to finish. The drug's going to like open up your mind. Therapy, like in conjunction with the drug, will help people get through their grief and like their trauma and PTSD. And I think just it is really powerful to imagine like if people's lives could be radically changed by doing this one experience, like we should at least, I think personally, like fund this research, like fund the hell out of this research so we know like what these clinical studies could look like in order to give people the help they need. Because I think when you look at the healthcare system we have in the US, clearly something's not working. We're all anxious, we're all depressed, we have chronic illness and disease and everything. And I don't think psychedelics will solve all of that, but you know, the world's really fucking tough and people have gone through a lot. And I think this should be an option in our healthcare system, because the people that this is good for, it's good for trauma survivors, it's good for PTSD. I think the research on eating disorders is fascinating. As we've talked about eating disorders, like your brain is stuck thinking a certain way. And not like to think, oh, the trip is going to be this like band-aid solution that's going to fix everything. But like, if you have been struggling with something for 30 years, I think it does beg a question of like, maybe there is something that could break this habit loop that I'm on. Like, maybe I've tried all the forms of therapy. I've tried talk therapy. I've tried inpatient treatment. I've tried this. I just think it's a really interesting new model of treatment and care that we can give to people. But once again, we do need specifically trained like psychotherapists to not only administer the drug, but to be able to guide people through this experience. But it does shift the approach away from like treating these things as like crazy mental illnesses and stigmatizing people who have trauma and PTSD. But really, it treats people in a way that makes them feel like capable human beings. Like you can modify your own experience of life and you can find a meaningful interpretation of whatever you've been through and you're able to move forward with it. But as I said, you know, we're not there yet. We definitely need more research and more studies into it. We need certification requirements for how you could be a therapist. Like, is it going to be mental health practitioners? Is it going to be psychiatrists? Is it going to be like anyone can sign up to do this? Like, how is that going to roll out? Because I also think there are risks, right? You know, we do know that bad trips happen. They can be scary and intense and terrifying. And if we don't have licensed practitioners, like it could be a bad place. As I mentioned earlier, like Michael Pollan has a lot of resources on this. And also the Johns Hopkins Center has developed like a full research bot research center at the university that is really leading and pioneering different treatment options for psilocybin. They're looking into the science and like what sort of diseases it can solve, like how would it get rolled out. So just wanted to talk about this because I find it to be very, very fascinating. And I hope that the research does develop in this place because I think it could help a lot of different ailments that people are experiencing.
Yeah, I think it's kind of exciting to see like Western medical, establishments sort of starting to slowly embrace these perhaps more alternative ways of treatment. And like Kate said, I think, it's, there's so much emerging research and science, and just to kind of see how this will further influence, how we think about therapy and treating people with different disorders. And I think like especially with eating disorder treatment, I think this could be a huge unlock just because this book that I read, Deadweight, it goes really in depth of like how backwards treatment is for eating disorder patients, and like how a lot of the eating disorder facilities really do not actually make people any better. And like the amount of people that relapse and do go back into these treatment centers, it's like fairly high. And I think like knowing that there's these alternative models that can perhaps be more beneficial is like really exciting. And it's just, thinking about how many more lives we could A, save, but also improve through this. The next section is about like protein powder. So kind of sticking to the sports related theme here, I've kind of gotten more back into protein powder. I was sort of off it for a while. I don't know why. I just was like not interested in like buying it and like spending $50 on a big sack of protein. But I think it is something that people should all really definitely consider. And I do consider it a food supplement that I would like to say that I think everyone would definitely benefit from. And I'm sure like most CMS release are taking protein powder, but for people who maybe don't take it and want to know like why is it that I should be prioritizing it, protein powder obviously is protein, so it's going to aid in building muscle and recovery. And really the nice thing about protein powder is that it's like so convenient versus eating like a bunch of beans or preparing a bunch of chicken. And you're getting like a full amino acid profile when you are consuming protein powders because they are particularly designed to have all those amino acids. And for people who don't know, with protein, you need to have a certain amino acid profile in order to actually be able to build the building blocks for muscle, which is having this type of protein. And also, protein is good for all ages, not just for young people that are, developing, but also for people in like their 30s, 40s, and if you're pregnant as well. We as a nation typically undereat protein just because we do eat the standard American diet. And, having adequate protein is so necessary for metabolism, preventing bone fractures, and it's also just necessary for longevity. There's a lot of research behind that. And protein powder is mainly developed by extracting proteins from sources, whether that's like milk, soy, or peas, and that it is dried and powdered into a supplement. Now, there's a lot of like talk and back and forth between like plant protein versus like whey, which one's better for you, which one's like more effective. And I think what is great is that this is a supplement that can be available for any type of dietary restriction. So if you are vegan, you are able to get a protein powder. And I think like as a vegan or as a vegetarian, it is like so important to get adequate protein, and it can be challenging to hit that amount. I know when I was vegan, I was utilizing a lot of protein powder, and I was probably, I don't want to say like using it, but I definitely was like utilizing it as a replacement instead of like eating like tofu or more beans, et cetera. But kind of getting into the differences between plant protein and whey for you to decide which is perhaps best for you. Different forms are going to be more or less processed, but just because a certain form of protein powder is more quote unquote processed doesn't necessarily make it bad. So hemp protein is going to be the least processed compared to some other whey proteins. And like I said, this processing is not entirely that bad. So for example, whey hydrolysate is a certain type of whey protein that experiences extra processing that allows the protein's amino acids to actually be absorbed faster in the body. And then some other whey proteins are going to require processing to make them lactose free so that they are less upsetting for people, again, who are lactose intolerant. Both protein powders are going to provide roughly the same amount of grams of protein, which will be about 20 to 30. I think one thing to keep in mind is that your body can't really process more than 30 grams of protein at a time. So if you're like, I want to get 100 grams of protein in, so I'm just going to do like two servings of protein powder, like that may not actually be beneficial, and you're probably better off breaking that up into two different servings throughout the day. But the protein content will kind of vary, and usually plant protein will have a little bit less compared to whey protein. Whey protein will always have a complete amino acid profile, so this is something that you're super duper passionate about or that you want to prioritize. I definitely recommend getting whey protein compared to vegan protein powder, unless it is a certain type of mix or it is made from peas. One of the issues with whey protein that a lot of people do typically experience is that it can cause digestive problems due to the lactose. Even if it has very minimal amounts, people who are super duper sensitive can still experience, bloating, gas, et cetera. I haven't taken too much whey protein powder, so I can't really say from my own experience if I've ever have had that. But in general, I really have never experienced any like the bad bloating side effects from protein powder. And I know that's like always like talked about when I get like targeted ads from different protein powders on the internet. But vegan protein powders can also give you certain digestive problems as well. And this is especially common for people who have IBS. But like overall, kind of like what's the most like highest standard or the best protein powder out on the market? It's for the most part going to be whey protein, particularly isolate. And it's because it absorbs the quickest and has the highest amount of BCAAs and leucine. So a lot of like bodybuilders or, ultra athletes are typically utilizing whey protein, but there's also plenty of athletes out there that are also utilizing plant protein powder. So again, it's kind of like up to your own preference and what your diet is like, and if you feel comfortable consuming whey protein powder. One thing that I did want to touch on though is that there is kind of this quality issue when it comes to protein powders because they are a supplement, and so therefore they're not regulated by the FDA. A lot can contain like sugars, fillers, additives, and like just high amounts of artificial sweeteners. And a lot of protein powders are known to have metals. And the reason for this, especially with vegan plant protein powders, is that plants accumulate heavy metals in soil, which is why vegan protein powders may contain higher levels compared to whey protein powder. The Clean Label Project actually did a test on 135 of the top brands, and they actually found that organic protein powders had two times more heavy metals, and plant-based protein powders typically tested worse on the list. You can go online to see the protein powders that they tested, and if you really, really care about, the quality and the sourcing and all of that, I recommend using that as like a shopping guide for yourself. But, I think this can create a lot of fear-mongering, and I do want to mention and say that like you're likely not going to experience the adverse effects of like high and heavy metal content and protein powders just because the quantity that you're eating in a day is so minimal. So, you know, if you are worried about heavy metals, you can consider an animal-sourced protein powder. And again, always look for brands that are third-party tested. There's so many protein powders on the internet. There's like so many different flavors. And I think a lot of brands are just kind of out there to make money and don't actually have your best interest. But there are some really great brands that, you know, do care about your health and do care about quality. MyModiGreen has some. There's so many on the internet, but that's kind of like the first one that comes to mind. I know like Clean Simple Eats is like a fairly popular one right now. I was taking New Zest back today. I know Promix is another really great high quality protein powder as well.
Yeah, I like Clean Simple Eats a lot. My sister put me onto that brand. And I think it uses whey protein. I forget. I don't think it's plant-based, but they have some really fun flavors. To round out this episode, we're going to talk about running a little bit. A few of you girlies have been DMing me about half marathon and also marathon tips and sort of like what to expect on race day. And obviously, this is going to depend on which race you're signing up for. And if you've run a race before and kind of your goals, like are you going for time? Are you just going for fun? Is it your first time? But this is going to be more of like an overview, things that I wish I knew maybe for my first half or my first marathon. So just some tips for all the girlies training out there. So number one, you know, you can't build fitness overnight. So I'm assuming if you have a race coming up in the month or so, you've been doing all the training. It's really risky to like expect yourself to perform in like a month to train for a half or a full. Like if you want to feel good on race day and not have any weird pain come up, injure yourself, finish it and feel confident. Like you're going to want to give yourself a lot of runway to train. You're going to give yourself a few months to get there. Marathons are even, you know, longer to build that fitness and endurance. So you will make it happen in months. And I think that's just a really, you know, realistic thing to give yourself. It's just setting yourself up for failure to think it's going to happen overnight. So you've made it there. You're tapering. You probably have a few weeks left until your race. You're probably anxious, like what's going to happen the day of the race. I think just thinking through every scenario that I'm going to give you here is going to get rid of that anxious thinking. And if I didn't cover anything, definitely feel free to DM me and I can like chat about my experience with these things. But number one for day of the race, okay, transportation. So are you going to take public transportation to the start line? Are you going to drive there? Is your family coming to watch? Are you going to do it alone? I think those are things to figure out now versus day of the race. I think a thing that I learned from the New York City Marathon is like when you are spectating a marathon, which is something that's like new for my family, you know, you could either be on like the left side or the right side of the course when you're running. And so if you want to go and hug your family, you want to make sure you know, are they going to be on runner's left, what we call it, or runner's right? So like when you're running down the path, obviously you should coordinate with that with them ahead of time. Depending on the type of race you do, let's say you run the New York City Marathon, some of the number bibs that you wear will have GPS tracking in them. So meaning that your friends and your family can sort of see you like a little sim running along the course and they'll be able to track you that way. But if you're running a half marathon that's maybe not as spectated, maybe not, you know, as much investment put into the race, you might not have that technology. So I ran with my phone on the day of the race and I shared my GPS location with like all my friends and family. So that way they could check my location in real time. And when you do see your friends and family, this is going to differ. Like, are you going for time? Are you just vibing? Like, are you going to want to stop or not stop? But I think sometimes it can be nice to know that your family might have like Band-Aids or an extra water bottle or some gels to hand off to you. My sister gave me a water bottle full of like the element electrolytes, so I didn't have to carry that. You know, some people will take a layer off when they see their family. So coordinate strategically with your family, you know, what mile you want to see them at. Maybe you're going to see them multiple times on the race. For the New York City Marathon, like I saw my family at mile 8 in Brooklyn. They found their way on the subway, they made it up to Central Park, and then I saw them then there. So having those points, I think, is really nice, not only for your family to know like they're going to see you because it's going to be a long day. And if they don't see you, that's going to fucking suck. But two, for you to mentally know, like, okay, I have one more mile here, and then I'm going to see my mom, give her a hug. And then I'll get back out there. I think it's just a good mental piece to know that you have like people along the way to support you. I mentioned sharing a location. Sometimes GPS is not accurate. If you think about it, New York, 50,000 people are trying to be on their phones at the same time and all the spectators watching it. My watch did not really work. Like the watch that was giving me my like paces and times during the marathon and my mileage was off. So while technology is good, I also think don't be reliant on it. You know, there will be physical mile markers on the course, so you can check that out and like pace yourself accordingly. Also, sending your bib number to friends. You'll get like the thing at like the expo either the day before or maybe the morning of the race, and that'll be a way for people to track you and like pick out your number. Where are you meeting after is also really important. The last thing you're going to want to have to figure out when you are tired, dead, beat up is where are we going to eat? Like, I always had reservations for like the brunch or the meal after, or if you want your family to have like a specific food with you at like the finish line. I recently went to the New York Half for one of my boyfriend's friends, and we brought him burritos, and like he didn't know we were going to bring them, and he was super excited about it. So make sure you know what you're going to do after the race and also where you're going to meet your family. The New York City Marathon, you have to walk like 2 miles through Central Park when you finish up the race to get out of the park. And so telling your family, like, I'm going to meet you on 82nd and Broadway is probably going to be your best bet versus like, I'll see you when I finish. That's going to be way too hard to figure that out. Also, like, know what your spectators are wearing and vice versa, what you're going to be wearing so they can like catch you in the crowd. I mean, if you want to wear all black, that's like totally cool, but you're just not going to be as like noticeable from the spectators. The start line situation, how early to get there, what to expect. Sometimes it can be super chill, sometimes it can be a shit show. The New York City Marathon, you have to go to Staten Island and like sit there for hours before you even start the race. You have to get up super early, get on a ferry. It's kind of a chaotic situation. And if you're running New York, you can definitely DM me about that and I can share with you. But most races are not going to be that chaotic. You know, you can get to the race line an hour or so before, maybe eat a granola bar, do some dynamic warm-ups, like, you know, take off your extra layers, give them to friends and family. I just think it's a lot different depending on the race. So that's something you're going to want to work out like way before the weekend of. Some races will have what's called like a race day expo, where basically you'll go and you'll pick up your bib and maybe other like things that you need for the day of the race. New York City gives you like a plastic bag at the finish line. So you give them what you want to have at the end of the finish line, if it's food, if it's water, whatever you need. So those things are good to coordinate like before the race happens. I also think if you're waiting before the race, you might want to bring extra food. Like, I think most people will eat breakfast before they leave like their hotel or their apartment, whatever, but you're going to be standing and like waiting around a lot, and it can be a good idea to bring like an extra granola bar, an extra something. And if you don't eat it, God forbid you don't eat it, but I think it's better to be overprepared than underprepared. Also, I think a lot of people get anxious about like bathrooms and coffee and water, and you're going to want to use the bathroom obviously before you start. Lines will start to fill up for like porta potties. So just give yourself enough time. If you're anxious like me, you don't want to feel like you're stressed out and you're going to miss something. It is totally okay to like sit there for a little bit before you get into the race. In terms of running, you know, you're going to want to start slower than you think. And I feel like everyone says that. You're probably going to be so excited to run. You're just going to want to sprint, but you have like a long day ahead of you if it's a half or a full. You know, if you are going for a goal time or something, plan the pacing strategy way before the race. I didn't really plan the pacing. I did kind of talk about it with the run coach I used for New York, just like, hey, I want to get to the finish line healthy. What do you think in terms of like how fast should I start versus in the middle versus the end? And obviously, I didn't care about finishing at a certain time, so I didn't really follow paces, but she did give me sort of like a gradual progression of like first 10, easy, super easy. You know, next 10, easy, last whatever, like start to just push through. So you can play around in your head. I think running a race is really about like mental math and breaking it down into different games in your head. So let's say like I've been doing for my long runs, which I was able to do this past Sunday, thank God. Every 30 minutes is when I take in a gel. So for me, that's like a little bit around 30 minutes, let's say. So I started to plan my runs in terms of like time on my feet versus distance. You know, I think it's a lot easier to train. Maybe it's not. Maybe you guys could say, Kate, that's bullshit. But I think it sounds a lot nicer. Like, I'm gonna go on an hour long walk slash jog slash run versus I'm gonna go run 5 or 6 miles. Like, for me, hearing 5 or 6 miles sounds much more daunting than I'm gonna be on my feet for an hour. Because if you live in New York City or you go on your long walks, like, that's not a lot of time. And I think distance running is just that mindset of like, I'm just gonna be in the moment and just push through it for that period of time. And I think during marathons, like marathon training and also running the race, that's one thing that you have to get good at. Like, maybe you want to say, every 5 miles, I'm going to do stuff differently. I'm going to listen to this one album for the first 5 miles, this very different, distinct type of music for the next mile. I'm going to throw in a podcast at mile 20. You know, I want to run this mile faster, then the next one will be slow, kind of teeter totter between different paces. Things to keep it stimulating. But at the end of the day, You've waited for this race. You've prepped a lot. You're going to be so excited to get there, and the adrenaline will take over. Just make sure you know like what gels you like, which water you like. Do you need a belt, headphones, technology? All that stuff is charged. And I think also maybe you want to know the course. Maybe you don't want to know the course. I didn't really know the course that well for New York, and it went fine. But that's that. We're about to get kicked off the podcast episode. But if you're running a race, feel free to DM me with more questions. Hope you guys enjoyed this week's pod, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday. Peace and love.